I need something and I don't have service, what do I...
Just yell into the abyss.
Oh, sick. Okay.
This is the Extra Hawk Rate Podcast, episode 626 for the week of August 3rd, 2026. I am nut-hoarding cottage squirrel David T. Cole, and I'm here with the one that makes out with all your friends, Sarah D. Bunting.
Have you made out with me?
75-step skincare routine victim Tara Ariana.
Help me!
And 12-year-old asking for a beer, Carrie Rice.
I promise I won't shotgun it.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is an 80s music expert and the creator of the world's most dangerous musical moments on our sister podcast, Extra Extra Hot Great. You've heard her with us many times. It's Carrie Rae.
Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I mean, you say that, but we'll see. We are talking about Sterling Point, in which little orphan Annie, Ella Rubin, lost her mother as a toddler, but grew up rich as hell in NYC. She's also ambitious and driven, which is why she's devastated to find out she did not get into a prestigious summer program offered by Wharton Business School. It does, however, mean that when she and her twin brother, Connor, Keen Ruffalo, yes, he is Mark's son, find out their mother's father, Gordon, whom they never knew, died and left them his cottage in Muskoka. So that means she's totally free to check it out. And she's all the more eager to do so when she goes into her father, Stephen's, J. Duplass, safe, and finds not only the letter Gordon left her as part of his bequest, but also a whole life's worth of cards from him that Stephen hid from her. But arriving at the cottage only raises dozens more questions. The show is created by Megan Park, who wrote and directed the 2024 feature film My Old Ass, and directed some episodes, all eight of which dropped on Prime Video August 5th, the same day as this podcast episode. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Carrie, should our listeners watch Sterling Point?
If you're under the age of 25, yes.
Okay, shots fired.
No.
Sarah.
Shots fired. Jeez. Yes, you should.
Dave.
You don't need to listen to my opinion about a show of this ilk, but this show is daring me to like anybody in it.
Wow.
I mean, I get it, but...
Just us old hags over here.
It's a yes for me. Let's get into it. Because I suspect that Dave and Carrie had the same experience of this show. So, Carrie, go first. Why did you hate this show?
I didn't hate the show. The show made me feel so old.
I see.
I hated the way the show made me feel. Mm. Like, I just did not relate to these children in any way, shape, or form. And this kind of goes back to, I guess, the way teenagers have been portrayed as trying to think about, like, when I was a teenager and watching teenagers on TV, like Beverly Hills 90210, Dawson's Creek, and thinking to myself, well, yeah, this is the same thing that I was seeing and it being reflected at me, that I was like, this is not how teenagers behave. This is not how teenagers around me behave. But, like, I just cannot get on board with a 17-year-old child flying from New York City to Canada, telling her father that she's going to Thailand with her boyfriend.
On a post-it.
Yes, on a post-it. While her brother is apparently going to Ibiza with his French girlfriend that he doesn't even know how to pronounce her name. It was just so much that I was just, it just made me feel old and it just made me feel angry. So I also kind of felt like there was just too much happening. There was so many characters and so many mysteries that I just felt overwhelmed. The anger kept me from wanting to keep going with it.
Well, Dave, I suspect some of your reasons for not liking the show crossover with Carrie's. Was it that it made you feel old?
No, a lot of stuff makes me feel old because, sure, spoiler alert, kind of Mnet these days. I just was wondering who I was supposed to be rooting for here. That's all. And all the characters, yeah, they're young, but they're also all kind of dicks. And there's a place for that in pop culture. You know, everybody loves a show full of dicks, obviously, because that's half of TV now is just people being assholes to each other. But in a show where there is a question of inheritance, there is a question of who is my family really and all this, and then like the person that is at the forefront of all these questions is unlikable. I know it's the pilot and we're going to introduce them as some rich snot and I'm sure they'll learn some life lessons as we go along.
Guess what, Dave? They do.
Good. But on the first episode, don't like anybody. It was hard to want to watch more because of that.
Yeah, I get it.
Also, are there no Canadians in Muskoka anymore? The show opens with the lead character being pissed off that her expensive home automation system that opens her drapes at a certain time and has a white noise machine hooked up her phone isn't quite working quite right. That is the character introduction we have. Mm-hmm. So if you can roll with that person's journey, then have at it. But for me, it was just like, oh, God, come on, Jesus.
I certainly understand that when we saw the 75-step skincare routine, that was what turned me off of her. Yeah. Like, you're 17. Like, relax.
I'm not saying that. I think that the show wants me to like this person, mm-hmm. that she is aspirational.
Right.
I'm just saying, don't give a shit about her.
Well, I think they have to establish, like, there are certain things that you have and take for granted when you're a rich kid in New York. Because they are rich, rich. Yeah. Like, I mean, the trip to Muskoka, it's like, this tells me you have a travel agent, like a concierge travel agent on retainer, because I don't trust any child or myself, frankly, to be able to figure out how to arrange a seaplane from Porter Airport to Muskoka, whatever that one is.
Billy Bishop?
Billy Bishop. Billy Bishop Airport.
All right, let me just say this and I'll peace out because obviously nobody needs to hear me. But this encapsulates what I'm feeling quite well.
I don't have time for your little baby shenanigans.
All right.
Okay, Sarah, I would have expected opposite reactions from you and Carrie. So what about this did you find interesting enough to theoretically continue?
Okay, so I see Keen Ruffalo in the cast list, and like, I am sure this is just like my own information that I'm bringing into it, but he's immediately serving You Can Count on Me vibes with his character. He doesn't really actually look that much like his dad, in my opinion.
He has similar mannerisms, I would say.
I think there's just something about the way that the twins, tease each other and like get on each other it's not exactly necessarily sibling banter, but it's closer than TV sometimes gets. Mm-hmm. I just liked his sort of completely entitled abruptness. Sup pimps, grandpa died is like, I don't know. I didn't mind the delivery of that. I did not mind the lead character, Annie, just being this very rigid, like, Hannah from Everwood sort of lane. Like, okay, I mean, does she need that much skincare? No. Do the Marie from Mad Men splash cold water in your face, you're fine. I was a little bit, not put off exactly, but like, even though I think the average New York City super rich 17-year-old has a different like way of being in the world that we olds, non-richies don't get. Mm-hmm. I just kind of wish, like, everybody in the cast read enough older that I just wish they'd, like, aged it up to, like, they're in college. Mm-hmm. Like, I was a little alienated by that. Like, I found it not charming exactly, but, like, it's beautiful scenery. Everyone is pretty. There are some fun characters. Like, is it necessarily realistic? Does it understand exactly how a remote resort place like this would operate in its own universe? I'm not sure exactly. Is it awkward now to watch this kind of show and be like, the most fuckable one is the parent in the snap cap? I mean, that's weird, but I didn't mind it, and in fact actively liked it and was curious to see what happened and how it would happen.
Mm-hmm. The parent characters are our age. I mean, not Carrie. Yeah. She's much
if
younger
that.
Than us. There's a moment in the second episode, Annie's going through a box of mom's old stuff and like pulls out a cassette and is like, who's Jan Arden? And I was like, okay, so Dead Goldie is my age for sure. She listened to the same, she probably listened to CFNY growing up in Barrie or whatever. Like all of the Canadian details were very charming to me as well. The fact that Annie is freaked out at finding out she just inherited the whole island, you know, because she could potentially sell it for millions of Canadian dollars was like, why do you care? Like, you're already so rich, New York. Like, you don't also need to sell this property. And then when we hear, like, a similar one sold for $9 million, I was like, that seems low to me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out it is, you know, it is. Then we see Joe, the hot marina manager, played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We have to think he's going to end up being someone's secret father. And, like, I'm here for that kind of mystery more so than all of the murder mysteries that I feel like most other teen shows, including on Prime Video, tend to cluster around. So, like, was that aspect of it at least more compelling to you, Carrie, that, like, it was sort of a parentage mystery versus teens covering up a murder they all created together?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I was actually interested in what was going on. And I didn't mind the main character. Like, I didn't think she was a snob. Like, I think she was actually empathetic to the people. Like, she seemed very receptive and, like, open to everyone she met. Like, she was not, like, closed off. Like, she, I don't remember the name, but the blonde girl that she meets and teaches her how to do the boat.
Una.
Yeah, she was, like, they had a cute friendship, and there was obviously a lot going on with the parenting, and she has a secret sibling or not sibling, who knows. And potentially, I kept thinking that maybe her and her brother were not even really adopted or were the mom's biological children. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a little like, I do. This goes in some B.C. Andrews direction. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah. I know.
I don't think I could hang with that anymore.
Yeah. I definitely felt that too, where it's like someone's got to disclose something before these three try to have a threesome.
Yeah,
they might be related.
I wanted it to be streamlined, because if it had been straightforward, like if the first episode ends with the secret sibling or not sibling, who knows, is showing up. I wish that had happened earlier. I wish that was like the meat of the story as opposed to kind of all this other stuff happening. Like, I don't know what's going on with the real estate drama and Missy Pyle's character, who is, I don't know, maybe a lesbian, maybe a pedophile, who knows.
But it's played by Missy Pyle, so who cares? Like, to me, this is like sign of quality that I was like, oh, it's Missy Pyle. I'm in.
But that's what I mean, though. It's like these little things that kind of kept coming out of left field and were just like there for like 2 minutes. And then you're on to the next thing. And it's like, just stay focused. Stay with me. Stay with me.
I appreciated that they thought of a way around the whole kids being on phone all the time. Which is, we're on this island, we don't get signal. The rich kid that Annie knows from New York, whose name is Rory, and who has a 1992 cute boy haircut, by the way. Like, I didn't know what his deal was. It's like time-traveling Rory. He has a Starlink, but everyone else, like, has to go into town to borrow someone's laptop, like, on the mainland, because otherwise they have to just go to each other to have conversations. I was like, I appreciated that that sort of made it feel vintage, too. Maybe that was why I responded to it, because it seemed also in all of their like sort of shitty cottage wardrobe was like, this is the past. This feels like when I was a teenager, too. And I kind of like that aspect of it. So maybe that's why it imprinted on me.
I did appreciate that there are a lot of things that, like, if you take a second and you're like, wait, so but these are like super rich people, like names are being dropped that I know. People that rich would have hooked up some sort of like net extension thing or like a, you know, Kardashian hotspot. I don't even know. Made out of Skims. I don't know how this works. It's not really realistic, but I think that it is designed to be escapist and to send you back to a time where like the summer was its own discrete ETE thing where you just wore the same 2.5 outfits until they fell apart on like August 27th.
Yeah.
That world that you were in with these people was a world that like the people did not travel in and out of it with you to like your home world. And there's something about that kind of summer that I think is not as common now.
Yeah.
That kids either aren't left alone for this kind of thing or parents can't afford to give it to them because gas costs $20 a gallon. So that was appealing, even though it wasn't necessarily realistic. I appreciated that they were committed to hand-waving certain things, and then that was just going to be the situation, even if it wasn't credible, that they're just like, well, this is the world that we built, and these are its rules. So mm-hmm. I appreciated that. I thought, you know, I like the confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that's interesting. It's this idea that we're going from a world where they have complete access because they're rich, so they get to do whatever they want, to a world where they have complete access, can do whatever they want because the world is so small that they just, there's not that much trouble they can get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting contrast.
Yeah. It certainly got to a more wholesome place than I expected when we first meet the characters in New York. Like, mm-hmm. see, okay, this is their view and they have trees under the windows. Like, again, you're rich then. Got it. Like, this mm-hmm. is not something everyone can experience. I thought it was fun and sweet. And I can tell anyone who like gets through the first episode and is like, I do not want to spend another second with these characters. Everyone does go on a journey. I feel like it earns its 8 episodes. And I hope it comes back because I want to go back to this world next summer again. If I can't live it for real, I'll live it on TV.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
It is time to go around the dial. First up, Tara. Tara, what do you got?
Yes, I have Unacceptable. This is a new British panel show, newish. It premiered July 5th. It is hosted by Ed Gamble, winner of Taskmaster Season 9. It's a sort of game with two permanent team captains, Richard Ayoade and Joanne McNally. They are each joined in every episode by two guest teammates. And the concept is loosely about panelists defending beliefs that are generally regarded as, guess what, unacceptable, although not so unacceptable that if they were clipped out of context, they would get canceled for real. Like in the 4th episode, Joel Dommett from those recent episode season of Taskmaster says he thinks attractive people should pay less in taxes. The studio audience is polled on their judgment of acceptability, and then the panelist has to try to win over as many people who disagree as they can with, like, obviously scripted points that they elaborate on in their own specific comic voice. And each vote converted to the acceptable side wins the team a point. In that this is just a very slightly tweaked Would I Lie to You, it is impossible not to see the ways that this version is inferior. One is that Ed Gamble is not a great TV host. He is good on his two podcasts that I listen to, but those can obviously be much looser. Here he seems like he's being hemmed in by the constraints of a TV broadcast with like segments and a commercial break. He has slightly relaxed as the season's gone on, but I still think he would work better as a team captain, specifically in place of Joanne, who is annoying and not as quick with an off-the-cuff joke as you would want for something like this. Ayoade is more the dry, like, David Mitchell type, so he is fine to me here, leaving aside his whole connection to Graham Linehan. Don't know what's going on with that. Also, one more thing about Ed. He has consented to being dressed for the show like a complete asshole, like multiple bolo ties in very, like, different episodes. I mean, one at a time, but another issue is that even though panelists obviously work with writer-producers on the arguments for their opinions, some of them understand there's a degree of debate showmanship required to make the show fun, and some of them act like they think the viewer's gonna think they really believe what they're saying, and so they are sort of undercutting it as they go. For example, in her episode, Maisie Adam has to say, I wholeheartedly believe that we should let AI run the world. No offense. She has neither the acting talent nor wit to sell it. Sorry. And watching her cringe and giggle through her presentation feels like a waste of my time. By contrast, when Ivo Graham, who graduated from Eton, argues that private school graduates deserve state support, he is clearly adding to what he's been given, keeps up the gag through the entire episode. And finally, even though we all know the points are meaningless on these shows, no one actually wins anything. Only the main segments the audience is polled for seem to affect the scores generally, which makes the other ones feel like filler because they are pointless, literally. Like, just make the episodes a half hour. It doesn't have to be an hour. You're going to see a lot of your British comedy faves come through. Unacceptable is unfortunately not unforgettable. And Dave, you have been watching this as well. Your thoughts?
I don't need structured scoring,
but that is a problem that some of them have points, some of them don't, but also they have these various segments like Would I Lie to You, you know, it's the stitch up. And they go back and forth. There's no flow to it. Like, they could have a stitch up and then two other things and they do another stitch up. Like, it's very built by committee. Like, mm-hmm. there was too many chefs in the kitchen and they all wanted their particular version of the show. And what they got was this sort of confused mess.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that nobody really ever really changes anybody's mind about a thing. So, like, the whole idea that you're presenting an unacceptable viewpoint and your task is to change the audience's opinion about that from their first reaction, like, it swings maybe 10 points at anything. Like, there's no drama to it. Mm-hmm. Unacceptable, I guess nobody's committing to the bit.
Yeah.
Because the bit is inherently dangerous to people that they have on the show.
Yes. The latest episode, Fatia El-Ghori from a couple of seasons of Taskmaster ago came on, and her unacceptable opinion was all marriages should be arranged. And they were like, okay, the audience can vote on it. And she just goes, you better vote yes, or else if you want to leave here with your legs. Like, her attitude really suits the show more. Yeah. Like, she was way more committed to just being very aggressive. And mm-hmm. that was funny. But overall, you don't have to fly to England to watch this. It's fine. For my plug, I filed it over one Earth month ago, and finally it is live. I wrote for GQ an essay about why TV finales tend to not stick a landing, divided into various broad categories of, like, how specifically they failed. So we'll link that in the show notes.
All right, Carrie, what do you got for us?
I watched Heartstopper Forever, which was the wrap-up two-hour movie to the TV series Heartstopper. It's a really beautiful story that's based on a graphic novel by Alice Oseman about two teenage boys who fall in love. The wrap-up story was really beautiful, a little bit repetitive. It probably could have been a little bit shorter, or maybe devoted more time to the side characters as opposed to having the main characters kind of go back and forth so often. You know, I have to bring up Heated Rivalry, but this is a show that I have tried to recommend to many people over the years, including certain people on this podcast, and have not successfully gotten people on board. But I have recommended it to my Heated Rivalry watchers, that if you want to sort of go back in time and maybe see the sort of PG version of Heated Rivalry, this is for you. It's just such a lovely, beautiful story about queer teens finding each other, finding themselves. It gets into PG-13 territory. Ooh. So you do have Ooh. Something to look forward to. Yes. I was a little scandalized in the two-hour movie about some of the places they were going, as it were.
The second base? Is that one of the places?
And just lovely acting from Kit Connor and Joe Locke, the two leads. And besides the main story, like I said, there's lots of side characters that are exploring a lot of different identities. And there's just really something for everyone, I think. Try the first three episodes, I would say. And if you're not hooked by then fine. But they're so breezy. They're like 20, 25 minutes. So please give Heartstopper a try.
And for your plug,
I have a podcast called Hey, Remember the 80s that I do with my best friend, Joe. And we just dropped our 300th episode.
Woo! Woo!
I'm really proud of that. It's crazy. We started it on a whim 7 years ago. We had absolutely no experience. We still don't. I was editing the latest episode yesterday and was getting really frustrated because I am still a very amateur editor.
Relatable.
We talk about 80s music. In our latest episode, we have a segment called Just a Bit Outside, where we cover songs that hit between 41 and 100 on the top 100. We covered Van Halen, Bullet Boys, REO Speedwagon, and Erasure. So you're getting the gamut with us. And we have a fun time. So if you like 80s music, check it out. Really proud of everything we've done for the last 7 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So, yeah, fun's over, folks. The latest surfacing of longstanding allegations against erstwhile Catalano Jared Leto was called Jared Leto, Hollywood's Dark Secret. It aired on BBC last week. It is now available on YouTube. It is not an easy sit, obviously, but it does do a few things well. It keeps the runtime trim. It's not quite an hour long. It's not larded up with corny reenactments. I was sort of sitting in front of it like, oh, God, like I know this is important and significant testimony, but I just am so tired of this, like the depressing sameness of this exact story. And then, boom, it's our esteemed colleague, Mo Ryan, in a talking head interview with Fabulous Necklace, commenting on why alleged predations like Leto's, the open secret of longstanding kind, never seem to resolve or see justice. The answer is, as usual, follow the money. Famous slash powerful creative people have entire economies surrounding them, and seldom is anyone feeling like they're in a position to make a change, motivated to crash those economies, not bound by NDAs, etc. The director of this one, Alice McShane, is experienced in this subgenre and gets good material from that interviewee and the others, and is compassionate in their questioning. There are a couple of bracingly repellent moments here. You don't need to make yourself watch it, obviously. Most of the headline-making material has been out in, like, wrap-up form for a few days by now. But overall, it is well done and not too rubbernecky. I think it has a couple of striking moments, too, that are worthwhile. I had a longer write-up of the documentary at bestevidence.fyi. I will link that for thee in the show notes, and you can, as of this recording, buy Mo Ryan's book, Burn It Down, at my true crime bookstore, Exhibit B Books. We will link that in the show notes as well.
I also added a gift link for Mo's essay at the New York Times, Jared Leto and Hollywood's Open Secret, so you can find that in the show notes.
Yes, too. An excellent read that sums up her position far better than I can.
All right, here's what's coming up this Friday, an extra, extra hot great. It is The Shards, which is an interesting name for a TV show. That is available to club members. We'll talk about that and so much more. ExtraHotGreat.com/club is where you want to go for more info and to sign up. And then come back here, EHG Prime, in 1 week's time. We'll welcome back Omar Gallega to talk about Anna Pigeon.
Is that the noise pigeons make?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You wish.
Great.
FPS.
First person shooter.
Video games.
Digital entertainment.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Nonak presenting this week. It is David T. Cole. I bring you The X-Files Season 7, Episode 13, First Person Shooter. It is the year 2000. It has been, count them, 5 years since the Fox series VR5 took the world by storm. To situate you in time, the video games of 2000 included Final Fantasy IX, The Sims, SSX, the snowboarding game I fell in love with, Tekken Tag Tournament, Tara.
Yeah.
Along with the first-person shooter video games, Counter-Strike, Perfect Dark, and Deus Ex, which this episode looks a lot like. So, David T. Cole, why is this episode of The X-Files no knack worthy? I have 6 easy reasons for you. Reason number 1, it's terrible depiction of video games. The episode starts with 3 gamers in tactical specialized gear, and they're psyching themselves up to enter a VR video game sort of situation. There's the alpha guy, his name is Retro. The nondescript guy is Moxie. And then the party animal, Low Fat, is played by Michael Bauer, who played Donkey Lips on Salute Your Shorts. Mm-hmm. Oh. Since then, the guy who played Low Fat has these low lights in his CV. Party guy, big cult guard.
Oh, dear.
Fat guy and fat schlub on CSI. So thanks, guys. The first problem with the depiction of video games here is that there's no real gameplay design in evidence, level design or world design. It's just like this generic box of a video game. They are fighting in what I assume is an alleyway between Fox Studio buildings. It's just like a big, long, giant corridor. You know those games where you just shoot down the long corridor?
Yeah.
The first thing they encounter is this motorcycle gang forms a straight line and just rides straight at the players who are behind a little bunker. It's like code from like Call of Duty War of 1812 somehow got into this game. Real dumb. They explode all the motorcycles in the alleyway. And then, of course, after the motorcycle gang, typically then you have the SS officers shooting at you with Tommy guns. It's just ABC. It just makes sense that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's more thought put into your struggling like mall laser tag shop than there is the level design in this episode's video game. It is real terrible. Low fat is down. His VR suit keeps shocking him to enforce his like wounded reality in the game. Retro goes into one of the warehouses and meets Maitreya's ass, an ass that is part of a scantily clad woman named Maitreya in her plus three lingerie armor of enchantment, whatever she's got on here. Retro, having met only one woman in his life, his mother, kneels and kisses Maitreya's hand before she pulls a flintlock pistol out of, like, I don't know, her ass or something.
Thank you. I have that question as well.
Shoots him in the chest, killing him. Like, kill him in a, like, IRL death. Mm-hmm. So if you want an explanation of how that's possible, you're not going to get it. You're not even going to get like a Mulder-esque ancient aliens hypothesis on what could be in play here. Doesn't happen in this episode. That's number one. Video game design is terrible. Number two is video games are bad, okay? This episode has a lot not to say about video games, like topics it wants to approach and does, and then backs off very quickly, not actually adding any opinionated content to things that are just very ephemeral in the episode. Video games are sexist is one of them. The tech industry is sexist. The tech industry is corrupted evil. And video games are emblematic of a society conditioning boys to be thugs. All these could have been the thrust of the episode. None of them are. There is no thrust to the episode, really, which is the big problem with this episode. There is nothing driving this episode beyond the visuals of it. It's like production started with storyboarding and forgot to write a script so this episode could actually mean something. Like at one point, Scully takes the sort of present day slam dunk political opinion that video games might be making people violent and therefore need to be regulated, etc., etc. Mulder just replies, maybe it's the other way around, that they are the salve for everything that is wrong with society, and they're great. And that's it. That's the discussion. It ends there. We don't get any more on that. We don't go into that. That could have been like the crux of it. Nope, it's not. Despite Scully calling out the immaturity of the game and its players, the episode is more concerned about making the enterprise of the episode sexy rather than pointing out that it is sexist. Maitreya's ass introduction is only one of many scenes designed to titillate, but not hook into any greater purpose. There is a craven video game company that is more concerned with the effect dead gamers will have in their IPO than the human cost of it. That could have been the episode. It is not. They even do some light a character assassination of the lone gunmen who are in this episode, who are suddenly stock option bros, who call in Mulder and Scully to try to make this go away as quickly as possible. Lots of avenues into the disaster that they are trying to present the industry is at this point in time. And perhaps then bubbling up from that could be a theory, an X-Filian hook into it, but it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's number two. Number three, tits and ass, guys. Tits and ass. Beyond the muddled purpose of the episode, beyond like the strange things are happening, there is so much screen time devoted to the female body here that it's like Troy McClure's sex ed movie, Fuzzy Bunny's Guide to You Know What, like where he superficially explains sex and then caps it off with, and now that you know how it's done, don't do it. That's sort of like what this episode wants to do. It's like, now that we've shown you ass and breasts and perhaps fleeting basic instinct style glimpses of somebody's vagina.
Yeah.
Don't do it. That was sort of like what I got from the episode. Like, there's a scene where the LAPD have arrested a woman because basically she looks exactly like Maitreya. I don't know how they made that comparison because the only thing they had to go off is a super low res three polygon version of her that they printed out from the game. But anyways, there are like 10,000 cops in front of the interrogation room just ogling this person, including the detective biting his fist like, oh,
ladies.
She's wearing a silver, I guess, lamé skirt that is like two dental bibs put together, chained by, you know, the necklace chain they use with the clasps. Basically, that's how big it is. So Mulder and Scully arrive, start to interrogate. She does the basic instinct maneuver here. And in other points in the episode, we see her as a medieval knight, the kind that wear thigh-high boots and skin-tight uniforms. We see her as bikini-top cowgirl in an Old West shootout where she clones herself a few times and there's like five of her. And in case you're wondering, that's 10 boobs. So that's great. My favorite part of that scene is when Scully shoots her, she dies like somebody from Hogan's Alley, the light game from the Nintendo NES. They just spin around and disappear. That was good. It's only commentary if you actually comment on it. Otherwise, you just have TNA in your show because you want TNA in your show.
Yep.
Number four, let lesbians be lesbians. One of the techs on the site when the first murder happens is named Phoebe, who after staring at her for 10 minutes, I finally realized it was Constance Zimmer. And I was like, of course it's Constance Zimmer. It's right here in her name. She's always been Constance Zimmer. Anyways, the closest thing we get to a reason why this might be happening is that Phoebe is the one who scanned Maitreya's body from the model we saw at the interrogation room. But for her own game, she was working on in her own time on her own computer that somehow, through methods, spilled into this one. That is the closest we get to an explanation as why this is happening. Not how, but just she's here now and she's mad and she's feeding off male aggression. We don't know anything about that game, except at some point Phoebe whispers goddess when Maitreya first pops up in the episode. But Phoebe could have been the throughput, you know, the POV for all this, but it just like spread too thin. Everybody's attacking it from every vector all the time. Nobody gets a chance to like, you know, be the highlight. So if they like did explore her character more, like maybe it would have made more sense when after multiple in-game deaths and just when Mulder and Scully are about to get sexy killed by Maitreya, she like just enters a kill switch she's had all along and that's the end of the episode. But there's like a real like lesbian undercurrent here happening between the fake character and the real character, and like why that is, we never really find out. That could have been an interesting avenue into this, but again, it's just there and disappears. We don't get it. The dialogue in this episode is terrible. Let me walk you through some. The gamers at the beginning of the episode are gearing up. They're psyched. We get this.
Do you see them? They're out there, geeks, looking to fry your huevos.
You know when gamers talk to each other and they call each other geeks and tell they're going to fry your huevos. We got more from that gang.
Ready, knuckleheads?
Flank right! Flank left! Go!
Is Retro 67 calling people knuckleheads in the year 2000? So the lone gunman, I was talking about them earlier, they have stock options, but...
Game ships on Friday. 50 malls across the United States and Japan.
Only there's a dead body between you and untold riches.
I don't know about you guys, but I'd be checking my shorts for cake.
Ugh.
I was so confused by this. It's like,
yeah, what does it mean?
I had to Google it. Like the only result was Mulder in this one episode of The X-Files. Not a thing. Not a thing. The very accurate gamer slang.
It happened so fast. Moxie's covering Retro, who's going inside after the enemy to rack up Buku points.
And then Goosh.
Buku points.
Buku points. God. Again, when are we?
Yeah. At the beginning of the episode, Maitreya has claimed her first victim. Retro shot him in the chest with the flintlock. And the gang back at First Person Shooter headquarters is sort of trying to piece it all together. They see a wireframe version of that scene. And then we get this.
It's a chick.
It can't be.
Can you text your rapper?
And then the first meeting with the detective from the LAPD, the one who later will be biting his fist because he can't, this is all he could do to stop from jerking off right there in the moment. We get this scene.
My partner, Agent Mulder, this is Detective LaCour.
Have you got something?
Yeah, our killer, I believe.
Shows the printout.
Hey, I'll put out an APB for Fredericks of Hollywood.
If this wasn't the X-Files and you just told me to identify the show, I would have been, oh, that's Law and Order.
For sure, yes.
First reactions to the flintlock killing.
Holy Toledo.
She's packing a flintlock.
That ain't all she's packing. Can you print that out for me?
I don't know what that means. That's not all she's packing.
She's packing boobs.
I guess.
Yeah. She packed them into her teddy or whatever.
We haven't heard a lot from Scully. She doesn't get a lot of bad dialogue, but she gets this stinker. As Mulder is probably dying, she takes time out for this.
What is that?
Mulder's vitals are wiggy.
What?
They're all over the map.
This is your fault. You put her here.
Hey! No fair picking on a girl.
And the worst piece of writing, but also this might be the part of the show that is so bad, and I'm not saying it's an intentionally good bad, but it's so bad that I enjoyed it on its own sake. This is the start of Mulder's end of show coda narration. Here we go.
Oh.
We came, we saw, we conquered. And if the taste of victory is sweet, the taste of virtual victory is not sweet and low, nor the bullets made of sugar.
What? Oh,
Jesus.
That's like a Simpsons parody of a Mulder
one. It really is, yeah. And my God, $200 for camera footage of Duchovny in the recording booth first getting this piece of dialogue. He's like, all right, fine.
I need a new garage, show.
I guess. Yeah.
You moved to LA for me. I guess we're doing this.
It's so poorly written. The dialogue is so bad. And there is obviously not a real gamer involved in this enterprise at all. It is so confused, a mishmash of things they've heard about, right? It's like old man tries to explain video games to a young crowd.
Yes.
All right. That was number five. The number six reason, and the final one, is one I'm calling Sugar on Top, which is this episode was co-written by William Neuromancer Gibson,
and it is
as bad as it is.
Oof.
Woo, stinky.
Have you read Neuromancer lately? It's not good. This is not a surprise.
A bunch of people recommended it to me. I got through one chapter, and I haven't been back, so.
There you go.
Yeah. In conclusion, the worst holodeck episode is not Enterprises, These Are the Voyages. It is this episode of The X-Files, First Person Shooter. There are some things I enjoyed about it, but I want everybody to have their say, and perhaps they'll come up then. If not, I'll bring them up later. So who wants to go first talking about First Person Shooter?
Well, we should go with our guest, because she picked it. Yes, hello. I'm trying to recover from that.
Damn you.
I was a big X-Files fan. I am a big X-Files fan. I picked this because I did not remember what it was and just wanted to, you know, revisit the X-Files. This sucked so bad for all of the reasons that they have said. But here's where I'm coming from. I am not a video games person. I have played Mario, Super Mario Brothers, like that is my experience with video games. So I do not have any background for this TV episode, but I can tell you that everything in it is garbage. Yep. Like that's how bad it is. Like, just, you don't need to have any experience to know that, like, everything that's happening is so ludicrous. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't even make any sense. Like, they're playing this game in like a virtual environment, and then they're talking about shipping this out to stores. And I'm like, so someone goes to a store and buys this game, and then where do they play it? Like,
I think what they're saying is, when one of the lone gunmen says is going to 50 malls in the US and Japan, is that they're like event things in those malls, and I don't understand the mass market potential for this.
Right.
Feels like you'd have to charge like $200 a pop to make it worth your while.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
that makes sense in the dialogue. It makes absolutely no sense for a business that's about to have an IPO.
Yeah.
Like somebody's going to look at this as like, okay.
Well, then they'd already be built, right? And what are they shipping? Whatever. Okay, fine.
Yeah, just lean into the snuff film of it all because these things are already built, like at next to the Sparrows.
Just to quickly clarify the actual nature of the game, I've been calling it VR, but it's this weird thing. They're not wearing like goggles. They're just going into this white room of a setting that has magical projectors all over it that makes it look like it is a different reality, which is, of course, not even technology we have today, nor will we for the next 40 years, probably.
Well, it's sort of like the haunted rides at Disneyland used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yes, it is the most dramatic hallway you ever enter. Mm-hmm. Even when it's digitally projected, this is as much imagination as anyone has.
And then on top of that, there's the question of like people go into the game and then the game ends, but they're still in there. What's the mechanism for that? Never even really questioned.
Yeah.
It's just Mulder's in the game still, even though it's been shut down. Okay.
Yeah. And no one says, why don't they just play this game at a laser tag facility? Because that's essentially what it is. Anyway, back to you, Carrie.
Wild. they also kind of sell out Mulder's character because Mulder is, of the two of them, he's kind of like the technophobe. So this idea that he is like suddenly calling for a texture wrap is completely insane. his big hobby at home was pornography, not playing video games. So it's just really wild. I just hated it so much. Everything you said about it was on point in that it was trying to say so much that it said nothing at all. I didn't think that the lesbian not happening between Constance Zimmer and Scully, I thought she was like gaga for Scully. And Scully, as always, was blissfully ignorant to.
Well, the episode, after Maitreya has been, I don't know, derezzed or whatever happened at the end of that episode, the CEO is all sad because his game's been somehow erased from existence. Like there's no such thing as backup servers or anything like that. But then like the computers boot up by themselves because X-Files, and then Maitreya's back, except they pan around in universe and it's maybe Scully's face is so bad. I mean, it's supposed to be Scully, but it's so bad that I was like, is that Scully? So, to your point, Phoebe has created her next digital muse.
Oh, we were meant to believe that Phoebe had created that. Okay.
Oh, I thought we were just supposed to think like the magic enchanted / cursed game copied Scully after she went in it.
Sure, but Phoebe is Dr. Frankenstein here.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. And one final note, I would like to say that this came out in like 2000, right? Yep. Like early 2000.
February.
The Basic Instinct came out in 1992.
I had the same note.
The classics never go out of style, guys.
I mean, we're reaching back 8 years for like the most disgusting sexist joke possible.
Mm-hmm.
Tragedy all around.
I had to read Gibson's Neuromancer for a college postmodernism class. It was a really long couple weeks. But I saw that writing credit and was like, oh boy. And then you got the fucking Lawnmower Man access denied level graphics. 8 or 9 years after that movie came out, lots of war gamesy exposition while people are doing that, like, we're just going to like twiddle our fingers on the keyboard and there's not actually any result or outcome that would line up with the keystrokes. Then we're just going to talk about how the computer has sealed off entry from the humans, that there's no failsafe. You know, he's Joshua's got the codes. Guys, this has been done better by cuter actors. And if Duchovny just wanted to go sleeveless, just find some other way. But this was just like completely off tone, copying from all the wrong things and not really paying them homage so much as copying them with and taking the wrong ideas from them. The phrase virtual mayhem should only be used once, if at all, not two or three times. Everything about it was bad enough that it stopped being even amusing in its terribility. Was like, fine, I'm going to list things I enjoy. One is that we are at the beginning of the Scully perfect lob Wimple hairstyle era. Flawless. And number two is that Krista Allen's ass is perfect.
Yeah.
Fortunately, because we see a lot of it.
Sure,
like,
do.
One of my first notes was like, that's a lot of cheek for prime time. Excellent no-neck pick. This was like, it just kept peeling it like a, you know, rotten onion. I just kept peeling it, and there were more layers of like baffling terribility.
I'm a little surprised, Sarah, that you didn't bring up the crime scene part of it, which is after the first guy dies and gets the flintlock to the chest, they bring in like a pro gamer to deal with the problem in the universe, you know, to go into the game. It's an active crime scene. And there's like, oh, it's Daryl Masashi. It's like, oh, they're all whispers around the side. And they just let him in. And he's like just wandering through where somebody just died, doing his virtual thing. And the cops are like,
yeah,
all right.
And then he gets
chopped into bits.
He sure does.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right.
Just to piggyback on what everyone else was saying about Basic Instinct, there was already a whole spoof of Basic Instinct called Fatal Instinct that Carl Reiner directed that was 7 years older than this episode. So it's like, it's doubly embarrassing that they're still doing this shit.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I saw that company that makes this video game is called FPS, I was like, this is so first thought. It was so like, not this, but this, we'll fix it later. And then no one else came back to fix it.
And also their logo on their computers is a flaming logo. Oh, so, you know, it's the year 2000. I was like, oh, that takes me back.
Yeah, I can't really add to much else other than what everyone else said. It's like the guy who gets shot with a flintlock having, I think no one has said, he's got like resting Jake Busey face. He's got like perma pout mouth. It's very off-putting and unappealing. He's like if Jake Busey and Gil Bellows had a baby and it was all fucked up. That's this guy.
And it smiled at you.
Krista Allen, I agree, body is tea. Like, you know, she should be putting it on camera. That's what it's essentially for. But it's so embarrassing how this episode, like Dave said, cannot portray the idea of sexist exploitation without being equally as sexistly exploitative itself.
Can't or doesn't want to.
Well, exactly. I mean, we talked about Furious last week, which is like largely revolves around film of child sexual abuse, which you don't see a frame of in the actual show, like for good reason, because we've learned better. And I would love to think that if this episode were made again, it wouldn't, but who knows? It's, you know, it's humiliating, especially all of the, like, these are the different kinds of sexy lady you can be in a video game. It's like dominatrix or cowgirl or sexy soldier sitting on a tank suggestively.
Yeah.
It's brutal. But I will also say the one thing I liked about this, which is it's from the era where they finally started dressing Scully in costumes that fit Gillian Anderson. And that's great for her. It was a dark era with the gigantic blazers prior to this. So
yeah. White tights as well.
Oh, yeah. One plus against the dozens of minuses.
Great.
Woof.
All right. Before I make this official, I just got a couple notes that nobody's mentioned, and I do want to bring them up. Just the visuals on the interfaces of things. We were talking about the FPS being a flaming logo, but it's the year 2000. Everybody's still got the giant, chunky VGA cathode ray tube monitors, you know, with 10 pixels either way. And the interface for everything just has like bevels in places just because, you know, because we all had to fire up Kai's power tools in Photoshop and do these interfaces. We're like, bevels, why not? Brushed metal textures on absolutely everything. Remember the first iTunes and how brushed metal it all looked?
Sure.
This is then. There is an autopsy where the guy is very visibly shaking because the room they're filming in is cold. And my favorite Maitreya scene is one where she starts doing super fast, sped up flips from like the 50-yard line towards Mulder. It goes on for like 30 seconds of her flipping before she like karate kicks him or something at the end of it. It was so ridiculous. It looked like something from Benny Hill. Anyway, let's make this official. Sarah D. Bunting, we're talking about this episode for the no-nag. No-nag worthy, yes or no?
Yes, Professor Falcon, it absolutely is.
Garrett.
Yes.
And Tara.
The bloodthirst is unquenchable. Yes.
All right. So,
this is the first episode of this podcast you've ever heard.
Welcome, if so.
That means The X-Files Season 7, Episode 13, First Person Shooter. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot Great No Neck.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time to find out who is our winner and who is our loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
It's me. Every time a no-neck rings, Buncey gets her wings. Actually, it's Task. Force. Adding, among other actors, Tim Blake Nelson, Kevin Fuck You Cole Dunn, and Gerald Jerome for season two. I am very excited, especially for that last one.
Mm-hmm. And loser of the week.
Well, when Tim was here last week talking about his profile of Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, pegged to Wonder Man, we were all very happy for him to talk to him because we did not know Tim was about to lose a weekend updating that profile because Wonder Man has been unrenewed for season two at Disney Plus.
Unrenewed.
Well, they renewed it and then they were like, just kidding. So
that should be illegal, like Tara said.
Yes, I sent that in an email. It happened to Glow, now it's happened to Wonder Man. Marvel, do better.
Well, speaking about...
Oh, for Christ's sake, fuck off, Cole.
Yay. Do you know what time it is?
It's good time.
Good time. Good time.
Welcome back to Game Time. This is the ninth of the season. The scores are Tara with 4. She wins today. She wins the season. Sarah right behind with 3. And Value Guest sitting at 1. Today, we are playing The X-Files, that's EX, from Seth, who earns himself an extra credit. Topic of their choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. Seth writes, The X-Files featured many great guest stars, but The X-Files delighted in killing most of them in gruesome and horrific ways. Players will be provided with an obituary of a doomed X-Files star and must determine the actor from the details of their funeral service. After the actor is revealed, you must correctly identify their cause of death from the multiple choice list for an additional point. So there are 3 pieces of information about the funeral, and then an additional point if you can figure out the cause of death. Maximum 4 points a question. Sarah D. Bunting, I know what you're going to ask, but let's just hear it.
Can we guess at every level?
Sure.
Yay!
Thanks!
Whoa. All right. Steel meal situation, please start.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 1. I have 4. Valued guest has 1 plus Eric's meal for a total of 2.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Sarah, Carrie, Tara, is our order today. 18 questions, no equalizer challenge zones. Are we ready to play the EX files?
Yex.
Yes.
All right, here's an example. The first 2 pieces of information are from the obituary. The first part lists from the X-Files. The second part lists from the actor's CV. Here's an example of that. FBI agent killed on duty in Dallas. That is the X-Files part of it. If you could guess there, it would be worth 3 points, seeing shaking of heads. So here comes the second part of the obituary. Service will be held at 666 Park Avenue. Attendees include Jack, Kate, and Sawyer. So put those 2 things together. If you had a guess there, it would be...
Terry O'Quinn.
Terry O'Quinn is correct. If you needed one more hint, I would have given you a couple shows that he's been in that we were talking about in that obituary. All right, so did he die in The X-Files from exploding vending machine, alien fetus, burst through chest, or killer bees? Any ideas? Carrie, what do you think?
Exploding vending machine.
You are actually correct. It was from that. That was from the movie. The rest of our questions are from the TV show. All right. Sarah D. Bunting, you are first. Here we go. Obituary reads, local stoner dies in mysterious circumstances. Not a lot of info to go on, but if you can name the actor from that X-Files description, you get 3 points.
Local stoner. I don't know.
He is survived by KG and a talking motorcycle that sounds just like Owen Wilson. Raisins to be served.
KG?
Yep.
And a talking motorcycle that sounds just like Owen Wilson.
Correct.
I don't know it from this either. Next.
The actor's CV includes Tenacious D, Heat Vision, and Jack, Clone High. Those are all the clues there.
Raisins, Clone High.
Yeah, no, that doesn't help me for some reason. Jack Black?
You're correct. 1 point. On The X-Files, did Jack Black's character die from ghost of executed death row inmate seeking vengeance, electrocution by friend in control of lightning and currents, or murderous cockroaches, possibly from space? How did he die?
I think it's the first one. Ghosty?
Incorrect. Electrocution by friend. But you got 1 point there. Over to Carrie. Morose Minnesotan psychic passes away at the age of 60.
That was... What's his face?
Who is the actor?
Oh my God. Peter Boyle.
Peter Boyle's good for 3 points. Yes.
Nice.
Nicely done. All right. Peter Boyle's character in The X-Files. How did he die? Was it broken skull resulting from slipping in pie, suicide via pills and asphyxiation, or stabbed by a rival psychic compelled by dark visions?
It was suicide.
You are correct. That is a full 4 points.
Nice.
Time.
Yay. Yeah.
Bronx-based cult leader / mad scientist suffers macabre fate.
Hint.
Memorial to take place in a high-end RV. The casket on top of a tanning bed, surrounded by footage of women's tennis. Angie Tribeca expected to attend.
This is Jerry Burns.
Jerry Burns is correct from Justified and Angie Tribeca. Did he die, Tara? Devoured by cannibal cultists to prevent aging. Bludgeoned with a hammer in order to save the woman grafted to his back to prevent aging. Or staked in the chest while harvesting human organs for consumption to prevent aging.
Sure. Given the two cult references, I'm going to say it's number one.
Devoured by cannibal cultists.
Yes.
Incorrect. Bludgeoned with a hammer in order to save the woman grafted onto his back.
Fell right into Seth's trap.
That was season 11. So.
Wow. Okay.
Ooh.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Roanoke polygamist killed amid series of sinister events.
If I had a nickel.
Yeah, really. Hint.
Funeral executive produced by Sam Raimi with Wild West themed decor and miniature chainsaws distributed by Michael Weston as parting gifts.
Oh.
That is your CV laden clue. If you need the actual shows, just not the clues, I can give you that as your next one.
Michael Weston as parting gifts. I need the next hint. Sorry.
All right. The shows in that hint were Burn Notice, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., and Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yeah, I just should have pulled the name sooner. Bruce Campbell.
Good for one. All right. Did he die? Injected with deadly nanomachines that multiply carbon in the bloodstream.
Yeah.
Car crash and freak hailstorm. Or shot by the police, though his demonic soul likely invaded a new body.
Hailstorm.
Shot by the cops.
I recall this one being kind of good.
This is season 6-7, Terms of Endearment. Back to Gary. Nevadian deceased following high-speed chase. Who is that actor?
Is that Bryan Cranston?
It is Bryan Cranston! Amazing! Yeah. 3 points!
That's in the canon, wow. Isn't it?
That one? I bet it is.
Maybe, I don't think so. Mm. Did he die in this episode? Body used to incubate alien life form which lethally exploded from abdomen. Resonating skull leading to head explosion. Shot by time-traveling Nazis in the Bermuda Triangle.
I think it's the second one.
Resonating skull is correct. That is a 4-point sweep. That is season 6, episode 2, Drive.
Carrie's killing us.
Yep.
I got the two. Those are like the two of the most recognizable episodes. Nevertheless.
All right. This will take us into our score break. Tara.
Yep.
No trace of missing research scientist begins the obituary.
Next, please.
Outdoor memorial held on Wisteria Lane with play-by-play provided by Dan Riddell and Casey McCall. Small possibility of American crime protest signage.
Felicity Huffman.
Is good for two. Now, on the X-Files, how'd she die? Choked by the ghost of her murdered boss, the Jersey Devil, or mind-controlled by an Arctic worm and taken by the CDC for study?
That one.
You are correct for an additional point. That was season 1's ice.
Ice. Ice.
All right. We are almost done. Let's get the scores.
Okay. Sarah has 4. I have 5. Carrie has 8. Sarah, do you concur?
Yes, I do concur.
Very good.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting. Your obituary starts. Body of experimental super soldier found on local beach.
Summerton Man, famous sitcom star.
The obituary continues. Expected speakers at the memorial include Hercules, Gabrielle, and Ron Swanson. In lieu of flowers, donations to pro-AI causes are appreciated.
Oh, no.
Lucy Lawless?
Yeah, Lucy Lawless, yes. The AI was in relation to Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, sure.
Oh, wow.
All right.
How'd she die? Murdered by a serial killer hobgoblin, fun word to say, with snakes sewn into her chest cavity. Insects fed on the inside of her head to such a degree that it simply collapsed. Or headless body punched through her abdomen. A headless body punched through her abdomen. Fun. Which one of those?
First one.
Not murdered by a serial killer hobgoblin. In fact, a headless body punched through her abdomen.
Oh, wow. I hate it when that happens. Especially during game time. God damn it.
All right. Your obituary starts with the X-Filian bit. Pittsburgh EMT perishes following FBI investigation. That's what happened to the X-Files. Do you know who it is?
Paul McCrane.
You do know who it is. Jesus.
Holy shit.
All right. Nicely done. We didn't even get to the helicopter bit of the obituary, but, you know, that's the way things go. How did he die? Struck by a truck and decapitated. Cancer. Electrocuted with a defibrillator unit.
Oh, cancer was the second one?
Yeah.
Electrocuted by a defibrillator unit.
Did you think it was struck by a truck and decapitated, then also cancer got him?
Yes.
Well, you're right. He was electrocuted. And that was from season 4's Leonard Betts.
Sure.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
The obituary begins. Remains of a shadowy NSA operative discovered.
Robert Patrick.
Patriotic service held at Perpetual Grace Limited. Attendees include Hurley, Saeed, and Sun.
Oh my God. Why can't I remember who else was in Perpetual Grace Limited? Fuck. Next. That was a crossover.
Yeah, it was a crossover.
Fuck.
There it is.
Your shows are Lost.
Yep.
Patriot.
Sure.
Perpetual Grace Limited. Who is that actor?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Juvenile.
Whoop. All right. Anybody know this one? Steel Meal? Know it? That is Mr. Terry O'Quinn again.
Fuck!
Oh.
How'd he die?
Fuck.
skinned by a reincarnated coal miner from the 1800s.
Ugh.
Disintegrated and absorbed into a vein of magnetite. Mm-hmm. Shot in the head by a member of the Millennium Group.
Shot.
Mm-hmm. Incorrect. He was disintegrated and absorbed into a vein of magnetite. That was from the Trust No One episode.
No.
All right, back to Sarah. Kentucky-based conspiracy theorist dead, extending lineage of family tragedy.
I don't know.
Vastly different eulogies given by parental figures Murphy Brown and Jeff Foxworthy. Additional attendees include Scott Aukerman, Sad Soberman, and Walker, Texas Ranger, who came to deliver some bad news.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
I still don't know. Shows, please.
Murphy Brown, The Jeff Foxworthy Show, Comedy Bang Bang, Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh my God. What's that guy's name? Grant Shawd? I don't remember. I don't know. Grant someone.
That was a person on Murphy Brown. Nice pull, thank by you. The way.
I will use my Eric's meal.
All right. What is it?
Haley Joel Osment.
Yes.
Oh.
Walker told me I had these.
That mofo.
We got a tiny cannon. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. How'd he die, Sarah? Shot by Scully while trying to burn Skinner alive. Stabbed by a Slender Men-esque monster called a ghoulie. Transformed into human sushi by a malevolent AI-controlled restaurant.
Slender Man.
Shot by Scully.
Carrie, you still have one more steel meal left.
All right.
Yeah. Should you wish to use it.
Carrie.
Thanks.
Yes. Body of student found in New Hampshire.
Okay, thank you.
I'm enjoying this clue coming at you. All right. Service to be held at pizza place. Attendees include one guy, one girl, and a Welsh football team.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds is correct, yes. How did Ryan Reynolds die in the third season of The X-Files? Vengeful telekinetic teen girls powered by a rare planetary alignment. Killed by a serial killer and incorporated into a gargoyle statue. Or radiation poisoning from a French salvage ship.
Teen girls.
Yes, hey! Correct. An additional point for you there. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Memorial to be held for missing Virginia doctor.
Next.
Air travel provided by Sandpiper Commuter Service. Expect some intermittently topless stand-up comedy at this very clean, organized event.
Crystal Bernard?
We're talking about Wings and the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Maisel.
Oh, Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub is good for 1 point. How did he die? Needle to the back of the neck via the alien bounty hunter. Consumed by a cannibalistic cult operating out of a chicken processing plant.
Oh my God, they're back. Yes.
Seemingly killed by his own shadow, composed of dark matter and held captive by the government.
Pretty sure shadow is one, but was it this one? I'll say sure.
You are correct.
Woo!
Soft Light from season 2.
Mm.
All right. Everybody's last question is here. Sarah DeBunting.
Thank God.
The first part of your... That's the spirit. Long-delayed funeral finally scheduled after body of missing woman discovered.
Ooh.
An obituary referring to another funeral. Mm. Meta.
Hint.
Event to be held in beautiful downtown Burbank with remains interned in the joke wall. Transportation provided via school bus, though there may be some unexpected detours. Mm. Either Frankie or Grace expected to attend.
Yeah, that just doesn't... Oh, wait.
Joke wall.
Yeah, no, I know. Fucking... That can't be right. Rook Buzzy?
Your shows are Grace and Frankie, Ronan Martin's Laughing, and The Magic School Bus.
What the fuck was on all those? Goldie Hawn? I don't know.
Anybody? That is Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
How'd she die?
But if she's not attending. Okay, never mind.
Perish in a murder-suicide lover's pact. Or phased into a rock in Area 51. Or eviscerated by a man-sized bat.
Bat.
perished in a murder-suicide lover's pact.
Since I didn't get the baseball one, I got to answer bat at some point.
This is question 17 for Carrie.
Spread eagle.
Spread eagle.
Eco-terrorists in Washington vanished.
Pass.
Services to be held at the Gem Theater with peaches and cinnamon served. All attendees, including Ballard or fellow boys in blue, must wear black.
Picky.
Titus Welliver.
Titus Welliver is good for 2 points. Yes. Jesus. All right. How'd he die? Torn apart by a logger possessed with a Manitou spirit. Sucked dry by a swarm of ancient bioluminescent insects. Liver ripped out and consumed by an eternal and extremely stretchy man.
The second one.
Sucked dry by a swarm of ancient insects?
Yes.
Correct.
12.
Season 1's Darkness Falls. I remember that scene.
Yeah.
All right, last question is for Tara.
Yes.
Attempts to find missing scientists have ceased.
Next.
Family and friends to gather in a scale replica of the Oval Office. Matt Elby, Serena Joy, and a deeply upset Jake Peralta expected to attend.
Oh my god. Oh, Bradley Whitford.
Did you see that guy's balls?
They were weird.
They were weird. Correct for 2. How'd he die? Descended into a volcano. Spore tendrils burst from neck. Shot with a flare gun and set ablaze.
Volcano.
Volcano is correct. An additional point for you, and that is regulation. I want the scores. Gimme, gimme.
Okay, are you a fan of extremely uneven scoring? Because if so, this is the game for you. Sarah finished with 6. I had 10. Carrie, 19.
Wow.
Yay, right. 19.
Nicely done.
Wow.
Valued guest.
Woo!
Wow, blowout. Nicely done. All right, the season continues. And that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We arrived in cottage country to discuss the chances of the Muskoka Travelers winning the big basketball tournament in Sterling Point. Before going around the dial with stops at Unacceptable, Heartstopper Forever, and Jared. Jared is a cursed name. We got to keep our eyes on Jared Harris. Yeah. He's the only one we got left.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Take it back.
Dave got the X-Files into the no-neck. We crowned winners and losers. And Carrie was the decisive winner of this week's Game Time from Seth. Next up, it's The Shards. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Did I get my HPV vaccine? Because she's right. This shit is everywhere.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I no longer want to believe.
And Carrie Race.
Get off my lawn.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
What kind of moron gets his yayas out like that?